Welcome, everybody, to another episode of On the Range Podcast with Warhawk Tactical and Kelly Defense. How's it going today, Rick?
Man, Mark, it's going great. Hey, just want to thank the viewers, listeners out there for giving us your most precious commodity, your time to tune into the show. Man, we couldn't do it without you guys. We've moved up to in the global position to the 2.5%. And again, we couldn't have done it without you guys. So appreciate all the support. Don't forget, you know, hit that subscribe button, that like button, leave us an emoji, thumbs up in the reviews, give us something just to help this crazy algorithm. And then, oh, by the way, if you guys are loving the show and want early access to On the Range Podcast, Warhawk Words of Wisdom, Vantage Point, or the vlog, don't forget to check out our Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/ On the Range Podcast. We got training tips in there. You know, we do a monthly Zoom call with our patrons. And man, it is just an awesome place to hang out. So if you want to support the show that way, definitely go check it out.
Yeah, wherever you are today, thank you for making us part of it. And today's episode is brought to you by Battle Brothers Shaving Company. Andrew Weiss has a great company. All the products, the shaving products, is made with the same aluminum that make UH-60 Blackhawks. He's a great guy. He does a lot of outreach. Go to battlebrothers.com and make sure you use the promo code ontherange15. Save yourself a boatload of cash. Rick and I both use his products. Rick does the beard oil and all the beard care, looking
so
good.
So smooth.
I don't think your beard's ever looked that good.
It hasn't. I mean, it used to be all wiry and nasty and, you know, little Battle Brothers beard oil in there. Yeah.
Now it smells great.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I use his shaving products. Unbelievable. It's like the old school double edge razor. Mm. Man, it is amazing. It's just like, you know, going back when I was a kid watching my dad and my grandfather shave. It's badass. Check out their products again. Visit battlebrothers.com and check them out. So today we have a special guest. We're actually getting into the wide world of sports, and we are introducing as our guest today, John Fitch, the MMA superstar. Man, started out at Purdue, Division I wrestler, had a fantastic career, then entered the MMA world and just took it by storm. He was one of those guys that, you know, there was a lot of superstars back in the day when he was really coming into his own, and he was one of them, you know, fought for the championship, had a great showing, and just unbelievable. Ended up making the a championship belt in another promotion other than UFC, and just a great guy. He does life coaching. He has his own website, and also he has his own show and podcast called John Fitch Knows Nothing. It's a blast. He's drinking whiskey, talking about stuff, playing his ukulele. It's amazing. So let's go ahead and ring him in, buddy.
Yeah, man.
From year to year, you can't even use interchangeable parts.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. Because everyone's trying to look for that buck. And I mean, the whole, we sit there and wonder, why is U.S. manufacturing in the crapper? And that's why, man. You know, if we had some standardization, I believe it would make things so much easier. So it wouldn't matter necessarily.
Creates a lot more waste too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
horribly,
John, since the new thing, throwing the other thing away.
Yeah. Since you brought that up, man, but scholars of history, man, I absolutely love it. And especially when you bring up the business thing. So when you were doing your studies, let's think about it, right? So if you want to say early 1900s, all these companies, the business names were the actual owners' names. You know, their name was their brand.
Put their name on it.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of lost that over the years.
Well, it's all made in China and in Asia and Vietnam and Thailand and Pakistan and India. Like, nothing's made here anymore.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, you put your name on it back then, that meant something, you know what I mean? And they wanted it to last. They didn't want to have complaints. They wanted to sell to Americans and make them happy, and that's all gone. It's not like that at all. You can't even get decent service at any kind of retail anymore. They really can.
No, especially if it's a millennial or Generation Z workforce.
Oh boy.
It's I've been to the store, and I went to get shoes, football cleats for my kids, and I asked the kid there, I was like, hey man, you got these, I had the shoes, I was like, you have these in these sizes, and the guy like sighed and like rolled his eyes and then went back to the back to look for him. I was like, are you kidding me?
Dude, I know why you're here.
I said to my son, I was like, did I make a mistake? Does that guy not work here? It's like, that was a uniform, right?
Man.
Oh, man. We did a podcast on that the other day, and I was at the grocery store, and this lady, I said, how are you doing today? She was in her mid-60s, and she was exhausted. She's like, I was only supposed to be here 6 hours. I'm on, 10, and these younger kids just won't come in. There's only four lanes open. I was like, well, I appreciate you being here, but yeah, they can't get people to work, and they can't fire them because there's nobody standing in line to take their job. So they just kind of give them the time off that they want. It's crazy. Crazy. But Rick was talking about the podcast and I enjoy it. You've got some fitness stuff on there. You got some watch parties on there. You're playing the ukulele. We were hoping you'd bust that thing out. It's pretty cool, man. I mean, how did that come about? I know Rick was delving into that a little bit.
So I started doing something called the Shake Break on my YouTube channel and, training for fights, doing whatever stuff. I had a time of day. My second meal of the day is a shake and it's around like 9:30 to 10. So I was like, I'm sitting down for the shake. I might as well just stream and see, talk to people. Yeah. And I kind of started doing it as, kind of like a self-help. Like there's a lot of young guys out there who like never had a dad and they just don't know how to do shit and they don't know how to organize themselves. They don't know how to apply themselves and they're a little bit lost. There's the lost generation of boys and men, right? Kind of now last couple of generations.
Yep.
So, I had a great dad and I got sons and I've been through a number of experiences. So I think I got a little bit of knowledge to share on certain things. So I started just doing that to get a little bit of feedback from people, see what was needed, how I could fit into the niche and help people out. And one of the things I started doing was playing my ukulele because I'm not very good at ukulele. I'm not that good. I'm self-taught.
I think you sound pretty good. I think you sound pretty good.
The more whiskeys I have, the better I sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. True with everything.
Yeah, isn't it?
But the reason I do it is because I want people to see that it's okay to suck at things. It's okay to just to do it. Right. You want to get better at something, you enjoy doing it because I enjoy playing the ukulele. I'm not that good. I'm not that good of a singer, but like I'm getting better and it's fun to play. And I was just like, guys, it's okay to suck at something. It's okay to suck at something new. It's okay to suck at something you like doing. Don't get intimidated by people laughing at you, making fun of them. They're the one that has a problem. They're the one that has the insecurity. Like, just do it. Just have fun.
Yeah.
Because when you were a kid, like who cared?
Yeah.
You want to keep that. You want to keep that mentality, keep that spirit when you're trying new things out.
Yeah, we have a buddy that says if you're interested in other things, you're going to be interesting, and that's right at the point.
I say that to a lot of guys. They're asking, they're young guys. What should I do with my life? Or like, what things should I be doing now to have a better life later on? And I was like, one of those things is like do interesting things. Do a lot of interesting things because that's going to make you an interesting person. Because whether or not you get good at them or you fail miserably, you're probably going to get a good story out of it and you're going to be able to tell that story to people and they're going to enjoy you telling that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick brings that up a lot, Rick, talking about how people associate with one thing and not being interested in other things. Mm-hmm. And it causes real problems. You know what I'm talking about, Rick?
Yeah. No, because I just wanted to hit on the point that John brought up earlier, man. You see this generation and it's like, I had this young man reach out to me and he's got quasi aspirations, if you want to say, about trying to get into special operations. Mm-hmm. But he pretty much lays it out. Hey, I'm not motivated. Don't know where to go, what to do. And it's like, dude, get yourself a win. To me, it was fitness seems to be the easiest way, right? Mm-hmm. So think about it, whether it's lifting 100%. Weights. If you can lift 5 pounds, more than the week prior, dude, that's a win. Or if you go
chop your body fat down a little bit. Yeah. Something. You can run a little bit further or a little bit faster. 100%.
Faster, something. I mean, it's a tangible win. And I think that's the biggest thing where we're seeing this whole everyone gets a trophy culture coming back to bite kids because they don't know how to push themselves. They don't know what do I need to do to get better. And man, if we keep this thing up, it's only going to get worse. So, the little Shake Break, man, I mean, huge to try to instill in these kids something.
Yeah, and then I ended up upgrading to the once a week podcast from the Shake Break because it was daily. It was kind of hard to find enough stuff to talk about on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and then I was noticing like if views weren't great, I wasn't gaining traction there. So I thought, you know, if I spent once a week and then put more effort into one show once a week, and then I've been doing that for almost a year. I can't even remember when I started, but I've been doing that for a little bit. So I'm having fun with that. But, you know, you talk about easy wins. Like, you know, I say this a lot all the time too. This stealing this from Jordan Peterson, but like make your bed, clean your room. Mm-hmm. Like those are easy wins. Like groom yourself.
Yeah.
You know, get up in the morning, make your bed, brush your teeth, like trim your beard, your hair, comb your hair, whatever. Boom. Like dress a little bit nicer. You don't have to spend a lot of money on clothes or whatever, but you can put a little bit more effort into like what you're wearing. That's a win. That automatically will lift yourself up a little bit. And winning is contagious.
Mm-hmm.
It's contagious. So you get little wins in the morning, and then you carry those wins into the afternoon and then through the night, and you just get wins all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Putting effort into something and getting those type of wins is, you know, it feels better. It makes you feel good about yourself and what you've accomplished today. Mm-hmm. It's being productive. And that's what I think a lot of you touched on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like you touched on it with the some of the generations coming up with the work and not going to work. I think people underestimate the value of going to work and doing something, even if you think it's a crappy job. There's no such thing as a crappy job.
Yep.
It's what you make of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, man. I used to wash dishes. You know, when I was up until my fight with Diego Sanchez, I was a dishwasher. Yeah. Right? So 3-4 nights a week, I was scrubbing dishes. It was a bar back. So I was washing dishes, putting glasses away, and I had to run and go get liquor and open it and basically do everything the bartenders would normally have to do except pour the drinks. I made it easy for them to just pour the drinks. Yeah. And I was probably the best damn bar back you ever seen. Like they begged for me to work more nights. They tipped me out great. You know, I was making $200 a night washing dishes and stocking liquor. And, you know, that was just my attitude with everything I did. I was like, if I'm already doing it, I might as well nail it. I might as well master this and be the best at it.
Yeah. I think that's a great, I love the podcast. Like I said, I've watched it and I'm a fan of it. And the guidance that you're giving to young folks who need it, man, good on you. We talk a lot about those things and it's, you know, Rick and I feel that we were lucky and like you said, some people didn't benefit from that. And any bit of help that we can do, and I can see you're doing it. Yeah. It's needed.
I mean, I got kids now too. So it's like, the more the world's screwed up, the harder they're going to have it, you know?
Right.
Well, I agree and disagree, John, right? I think if we lay a good, solid foundation in our kids, you're going to see what's going to wind up happening because, again, we're empty nesters. So my kids have grown since, you know, started their own lives. But you lay that good foundation, man, and I'm telling you, it's promising because what you're going to see is compared to their peers, you know, there is no comparison because their peers, it's I hate to say it, man. It's rough out there. And these kids just don't know good values, good work ethics. What? And if you can instill that in them, man, that's huge.
I saw, I can't remember what the numbers were, but I saw the numbers for like childhood obesity, pre-COVID lockdowns, post-COVID lockdowns it was bad. It was bad before the lockdowns. And then afterwards, it went from like 30-something to 40-something percent. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's really awful. I mean, these kids, you spend your whole childhood obese, like we're not even talking about a little bit overweight, a little chunky, like obese, like what's going to happen by the time you're in your 20s, like you're a serious medical condition.
Yeah.
Well, you got kids that are diabetics, man. I mean, I can remember growing up. Yeah. There was that one chubby kid that everyone picked on. Right.
Yep.
But it wasn't that big of a thing. Now, I mean, can you imagine being prior to being a teen, being diabetic?
No,
that is all, in my opinion, parent induced, man. You're not teaching your kids fitness. You're not teaching your kids nutrition. You know,
drink sodas all the time.
Yeah,
I've been at the gas station, and you know, 6-year-old kid walks up and grabs a Monster energy drink. You know, like a 60-some-ounce can of I'm just like, man, like, where are your parents right now?
Yeah, should we get a pill clip?
That stuff should. I can't even believe that they shouldn't be allowed to sell that to to kids. You shouldn't even shouldn't be allowed to buy a Red Bull if you're under 18. I'm sorry.
But that's the whole thing, man. It's the parents have to, you know, lay the groundwork. Because I remember with my kids, we didn't give them soda. They either drank, you know, good quality juice or it was water. That was it, you know?
Yeah, I don't. And we have water and we have these little mini drinks. Mm-hmm. They're like the Cool Plus. It's like the little gut bacteria little drinks.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But they're like 2 ounces.
Yeah.
So that's every once in a while, then like we go and do something special and they'll get a Gatorade or a Sunny D when we go to donuts or whatever, apple juice.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very limited sugar water. Sugar wash, like sugary fluid is like the worst thing you can put in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's like they went to this birthday party one time and I think it was my daughter asked for water. And the mother was like, "We don't have any." It's like, excuse me? Hey, do you want to?
I don't like the way it tastes. I've been told that. Yeah. I don't like the way it tastes.
It's just like, come on, man. So, yeah. But that's, I would just say this.
It really is wild. I was in the 7th grade and I quit drinking soda because I remember having I was at a party or something. I drank like 2 sodas and we're running around and being physical. And I just had like heartburn. I was like, this is terrible. And like, I remember there was a few times where I got that heartburn when I was younger. And I remember being at that party and I was like, I'm not drinking this stuff anymore. It's like, it makes me feel sick. So I stopped myself when I was, 13 years old from drinking sodas. I did drink a buttload of orange juice though, until I got to college and I had to buy it myself and I realized how expensive it was. I was like, damn, I was like, I was drinking like one of those big orange Minute Maid jugs, like twice, two of them a week, just about.
Speaking of your college, I've always been an MMA fan and I was a fan of yours. And I took a particular interest because of where you grew up. I believe you were in the Big Ten, you wrestled Division I.
Yep.
I'm in Southwest Ohio, so it was pretty close to where you grew up and stuff. So I was familiar with that. And I know you were in several different promotions. You know, you had a lot of fights and you're always successful and it was always entertaining. And I know that some of the promotions are better than others. And I know you've been vocal about that. It seemed to me that it was.
Joe Silva's emails is a part of our class action lawsuit. Like he would tell guys, you can turn this fight down, but you're really not going to like the next one. You're not going to like the next guy I offer you.
Yeah.
But no, and things have gotten a lot worse. The whole industry's gotten a lot worse. When the UFC bought, Strikeforce, they monopolized the industry. They own the industry. Like nobody's trying to compete with them. Everybody kind of works for them. The managers became brokers. They're not even managers. They don't have your best interests. They're more working for their promoter than they're working for you. And that's all of them now. You can't not operate that way because that's how the structure of MMA works now. Is the promoters have all the control. It's take it or leave it. And until we get some traction with either the Ali Act or our class action lawsuit or the Fighters Association, nothing's going to change. The UFC is going to continue paying less than 20%. They're going to monopolize the top belt. There's still going to be the show. And regardless of what other promotions are doing, like that's still where the majority of guys are want to go because that's where they're going to be able to make the most amount of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I totally, totally agree with that because to me, it seems like yourself, Diego, Tiago, and then GSP and all those guys that you fought against. I think that especially the UFC has a star problem. There's not those guys that know their names and you follow their careers like that anymore. It's a revolving door.
Well, they've become a McDojo type thing, right? They're the fast food. They've created the sport. They've turned the sport into a fast food sport. It's a pseudo sport. It's really a production. But what they're doing is they've got the TV deals. They've got the UFC. Like people buy for the UFC a lot of the times. You know, your average fan doesn't really follow. They just want to see violence and see something exciting and somebody get knocked out. So they can just keep cranking through with lesser known, less popular guys. And then every once in a while, throw in a title and they still do good numbers.
Yeah.
You know, and because they have the top 90% of the top guys in each weight class, right? They're able to monopolize those top guys, the top names, and they prevent anybody else from entering the market. No other promotions can really enter the market because they can't get access to the big names, which they need to put on shows and fights and really make money.
Yeah.
So yeah. John, do you think that's where you're seeing some guys split off and like go over to Japan and do stuff like that?
Well, the Japan market's kind of, it dried up a while ago when Pride kind of folded a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, a lot of the markets kind of dried up. There's a little bit less options. I mean, there are some places in you know, KSW in Poland, there's some shows in Russia, but you don't really hear a lot about those shows. One championship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've come to kind of see is that a lot of these promotions out there, especially in other countries, they're more money laundering agents than anything.
They're
criminal enterprises where yeah. where you can launder your cash and money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Never fails.
Yeah. I mean, but you're right about that because I actually have not purchased the ESPN Plus. I have for the UFC. I haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
now you have all these paywalls you have to get behind.
I just don't even, it's a shame too, because I love MMA.
Yeah. Well, and then we have the threat now that the same thing that happened with boxing, everybody, boxing's dead, whatever. Boxing, you look at papers from 100 years ago, the press was saying that boxing was dead. It's the same promoter dribble that they've been pushing out forever because it helps them suppress the pay to the athletes.
Yeah,
but a lot of people in the U.S., North America watch less boxing because of the paywalls. You know, in the 80s and before, everything was on free television.
Yes.
It was on ABC Sports, NBC, yep. CBS, whatever. Like it was,
you remember,
you watched Ali
Thursday
and
night,
Foreman.
Yeah, Thursday Night Fights was on USA Network all the time.
Yeah, so like you had free fights on television, and that's why everybody watched it and loved it and thought it was great. But then when you started putting paywalls up and made it hard to find who to watch, when to watch, you didn't know who the fighters were, you didn't know what it was, what was going on, they started making up reasons why, oh, there's too many belts, too many weight classes, whatever. It's really, I think, because there's no central point to watch them at, whereas if you have, you know, football, soccer, NHL, baseball, there's usually like one, maybe two networks that host all of that league's competitions. And it makes it really easy for somebody to check the schedule and be like, oh, I'm watching on Tuesday nights, always going to have this thing for me to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the streaming services have segmented those even more. I mean, even the Olympics, it was difficult to find any particular event that you wanted to watch. It's a lot of things like that. Like you said, the hands on the money are trying to make the most and squeeze the most. And it's ruining that you can't consume it. It's not easy to consume anymore.
Becomes difficult, and hopefully they'll fix that problem. If they could just, I don't know, man, if they could just like come together and figure it out, it would be way better.
Well, I think here's the key thing, John, right? Whenever money's out there, it always blurs people's clear vision. And unfortunately, they're not always making the right choices. I mean, plenty of money out there for everybody, right? Equal distro. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. But again, I think you kind of get some of that greed rolling in there where it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to sit there and take more than you, or however they opt to figure that stuff out. It's like, come on, man, you know, just